is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, March 15, 2024. And today will be better than yesterday. And while we have a lot to discuss about what happened yesterday over the last 48 hours, a huge trade. Dylan Cease is dealt by the Chicago White Sox. We knew he's going to be traded, but he's been dealt to the San Diego Padres, you know, getting the starting pitcher that they need. A huge injury has sent reverberations throughout the sport. Gerrit Cole is going to miss a chunk of time at the very least, and there is concern in the Yankees organization that he could be out for a very long time. Another huge injury. One of the baseball's best relievers is out indefinitely. We'll tell you about that. Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery still unsigned. The Padres and Dodgers have taken off for Korea to prepare for next week's season openers. A little bit to discuss, Sean, huh?
Just a little bit.
It's incredible how much action there's going on right now as we come down the wire. And also, just before we started taping a podcast, the Atlanta Braves signed Adam Duvall to play the outfield. They told Jared Kelnick that he's going to be a platoon player. So maybe based on what the Braves saw this spring in Jared Kelnick, and he's had some struggles, convince them, you know what, let's go get a right-handed hitting platoon guy who can complement what Kelnick does. In addition, you know, Adam Duvall is regarded as a good outfielder. I mentioned that Padres trade. They dealt to the Chicago White Sox Drew Thorpe, who's the number four ranked prospect in the Padres system, and three other prospects. Folks with other teams are telling me it was a good return for the Chicago White Sox for Dylan Cease, who's coming off a down year last year. And now the Padres will have a rotation that includes Dylan Cease, Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, and Michael King. Of course, Michael King is one of the pitchers that they got back in that deal with the New York Yankees. Devin Williams, who's one of the best relievers in baseball, was diagnosed with two stress fractures in his back and is expected to miss around 3 months, sources told Jeff Passan on Wednesday. Huge loss for the Milwaukee Brewers. We're going to be talking with Tim Kirkjian about that. The Yankees' Gerrit Cole has been shut down. He was to visit Dr. Neil Eletrosh on Thursday. As we're taping this, I'm waiting for some word from the Yankees about what they discovered. But I do know that they've had conversations within their organization about what's next. And also, you know, I asked around and found out that they do have insurance on Gerrit Cole's contract, and that might help them, you know, make decisions. And sad news about Bill Plummer, who was a longtime catcher for the Cincinnati Reds. He was a backup to Johnny Bench, a really valued teammate. Yeah, he just passed away. Sean, what else you got?
Man, I want to tell everybody, go check out the College Game Day podcast to promote this week. We had Fran Brown, who is the new Syracuse football head coach, talking with Pete and Reese. So I want everybody to go check that out wherever they get their podcast and on YouTube.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkjian.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkjian covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, what's going on?
I'm doing great, Buster. 2 weeks from today is the real opening day, and less than a week from today, we have real Major League Baseball games to count. So these next 2 weeks are like torture because we all know the players just want spring training to be over with. They want to start to play games that really matter. The media is in most of that, the same camp. So I just say, let's fast forward this 2 weeks and get this going.
Tell me how you're going to watch those first two games, Padres, Dodgers.
Well, I'm going to watch every pitch. That's a fact, because it's the Dodgers and the Padres. You can't take your eyes off the Dodgers. I mean, they are the greatest traveling show in the history of baseball. And the fact that we'll have Ohtani playing and Yamamoto pitching at some point, it's just perfect. And I don't care if it's 6 a.m. or 3 a.m. What else am I going to do, Buster? I wake up and watch Columbo every morning now. I'm going to watch a baseball game. I'll take it.
Oh, my goodness. And there is so much news to talk about with the Dodgers, with the Yankees, with the Milwaukee Brewers. You got Blake Snell. You got Jordan Montgomery unsigned. And yet all of it may have been superseded by the fact that just a few minutes ago, Shohei Ohtani posted a picture of his wife which is Gab. Everybody going absolutely crazy. I'm thinking about calling my daughter again for another special report from Japan. What do you think?
Yeah, it's just amazing. His dog, like, took over the headlines for, like, a week. And now we find out he's married, which Jeff Passan wrote about this. But the ability to surprise is, like, Shohei's greatest gift, is that every time he does something on the baseball field, you just go, like, how did that happen? You know, and then he gets this contract. How did this happen? And then all of a sudden he's married out of nowhere. Like, how did this happen? It's just, there's a surprise every single day with that guy. And thankfully they're all good surprises and positive surprises.
All right, let's touch on other news. The San Diego Padres make a late spring deal for Dylan Cease. What did you make of this? Obviously, for the White Sox, we knew that at some point they were going to trade him, and they decided to do it in March, and the Padres upgrade their rotation.
Right. And again, let's never put anything past AJ Preller. This was supposed to be the spring where they're not spending that much money, and maybe they're going to take a step backwards, and they didn't make the playoffs last year. Instead, he goes out and gets the best pitcher, certainly in the trade market. So I really like their rotation now with Darvish and Musgrove and Michael King. And now this guy, I mean, they have a really good starting rotation. I think they put themselves right in the middle of the wild card conversation with that trade. Now, of course, Cease has to be the Cease of 2 years ago, not the one that struggled last year. But given his stuff, given the way that he's thrown this spring, I've heard people tell me, man, he looks great. He had 8 strikeouts and 3 1/3 the other day. I think it's a great move for the Padres. They obviously have a lot of kids to deal, and this was a move that the White Sox had to do because they're rebuilding and they're getting as many kids in as possible.
All right. We're waiting for the Yankees to come out and tell us exactly what's going on with Gerrit Cole and his elbow. It's pretty clear no matter what the significance of the elbow is, he's going to miss a lot of time. How devastating is this for the Yankees?
Huge, Buster. This is, at least for me, the best pitcher in the game. And he is the only really, really, really solid guy that they have in that rotation. I know Marcus Stroman has a chance, but Cortez has come back from an injury. Rodon has struggled terribly last year. I thought they needed another starting pitcher, even with Gerrit Cole at his best. And now you take away arguably the best pitcher in the game. I really like what I saw the other day when I saw the Yankees, Buster, especially offensively. Now I'm really starting to question, because they have to go get another starting pitcher if, say, Cole is going to be out a couple of months.
So tell me what you're doing. I'm going to make you put you in the shoes of general manager Brian Cashman in this moment. Gerrit Cole's out for an extended period of time. You know, maybe longer than that. You have, as you mentioned, some veterans in your rotation. You now have a spot open in your rotation. You spent the whole winter looking to upgrade that group around Gerrit Cole, and now he's gone. You know how much pressure's on the team. Aaron Boone's entering the last year. His contract. What would you do when you have a free agent market right now where you have Blake Snell unsigned? You have Jordan Montgomery unsigned. You have Michael Lorenzen unsigned. There are guys like Shane Bieber still available in the trade market, but let's face it, Dylan Cease was the big get. And they have this luxury tax situation, of course, where they are going to be nailed for 110% on $80 they spend now. So if you committed, you know, I've used this example, if you committed $30 million to Blake Snell, that really is $63 million plus the draft pick compensation. If you're Brian Cashman, are you going to go outside the organization or stay inside and hope that a guy like Luis Gil, you know, Will Warren, take a big step forward?
Well, it's easy for me to say this, but they should have went and gotten Dylan Cease, because he was the perfect fit for what they need right now. But now he's gone. So, and I'm with you. When I saw the Yankees the other day, it was explained, you know, Snell isn't $33 million. He's $64 million is the way it was presented to me, if you get him in a short-term situation and the draft choice compensation. So I don't know what they're going to do now, because I think the trade market with Cease gone is much thinner, and I think they're going to have to do this from within. But if they went out and got Snell or Jordan Montgomery, brought him back, it would be difficult to argue with that because, Buster, we know, we've seen, I don't want to say the panic in the Yankees' eyes, but after last year, not making the playoffs, almost not finishing over 500, they were determined to make the playoffs and win the division this year, and now that is way up in the air.
If they stay healthy, the one thing I would say is I do think they have the offensive depth to create some margin for error where maybe they bludgeon teams and they buy themselves a little time, either for Gerrit Cole to come back. Again, we don't have the specifics of how long he's going to be out. Maybe he comes back in the second half of the year at some point, or to buy time for a trade. I do think they have that kind of offense if everybody stays healthy. What do you think?
Yeah, that was what obviously impressed me. They were a bad offensive team last year, Buster. And I had a couple of Yankees tell me, we're going to score 200 more runs this year. I even looked up all the teams in baseball history to have scored 250 more runs in a season. That's where the Yankees might need to go if they're going to outscore everyone with their pitching now decimated to some degree. But I love Aaron Judge in the middle when he's healthy. Juan Soto changes the entire look of that offense, given he's always on base. Alex Verdugo is going to hit seventh certain days on this team. And Stanton, who's got a different body, as you know, Buster, he's going to hit sixth on this team. And Volpe and the catcher are going to hit 8 and 9 as of now. That's a pretty stout lineup, but it's going to need to be at its very, very best because now the offense is the strength of the team, not the pitching, which was different last year.
Have you heard anything in the hours leading up the time I'm talking to you about Cole's injury that's new?
I haven't heard anything new, but, you know, when you've had a couple of MRIs and a horse like him, I don't think he's ever been on the IL for an arm injury. When a horse like him is saying, I'm not bouncing back here, that's just really bad news. And even though it was precautionary at the beginning, you know, not intense pain, just discomfort, when you're talking about Gerrit Cole, you got to get this looked at right away. And for the Yankees' sake, I would be greatly concerned.
You mentioned about, you know, potentially going out and signing somebody. One thing I think we should remember, from what I understand from a source, they do have insurance on Cole's contract. So let's say it's a devastating long-term injury. They are going to get some salary relief, you know, and I don't know what that percentage is. Typically with the insurance policies, it's like 75%. So maybe that'll make it more palatable for them to go out and do something. You've been around a lot of spring trainings. Yoshinobu Yamamoto has an 8.38 ERA this spring. He has a WHIP of 1.97. And Tim, I've talked on the podcast before how I was surprised after he signed, talking with evaluators who, while they loved the guy and their teams were involved in the bidding for him, they did say that right now they think of him as being more of a middle of the rotation type guy. That was not the sort of feedback I expected for a guy who got a contract like this. How, if you're the Dodgers, are you at all concerned about Yamamoto's spring training?
Well, obviously it hasn't gone very well, but Buster, I barely pay attention to spring training statistics. You know, they're all inflated for pitchers in Arizona anyway. And then the Dodgers that I talked to, I mean, Chris Taylor looked at me and said, elite command, elite stuff. He said, I watched him throw a bullpen, 25 pitches, and he missed one spot, maybe once out of 25 pitches. Everyone else loves this guy. And even though the numbers haven't been there, it just reminds me, maybe it's apples and oranges, but Ichiro's first spring, he hit a bunch of soft singles to left field, okay? Lou Piniella, the rather impatient manager of the Mariners at the time, went to him and said, can you do anything other than hit a soft single over there? And Ichiro said, well, I can hit it really hard over there if you want me to. That's right field. So Lou said, well, I want you to hit it really hard over there. And Ichiro then started to pull the ball. And of course, he won the MVP and the Rookie of the Year the first year. And there were real questions. Is he too frail? Is he strong enough? All this. And he turns out to be a Hall of Fame player. I'm not suggesting Yamamoto is going to do what Ichiro did. I'm just saying I'm not going to worry about him. Everyone who I've talked to thinks he's going to be the ace of the Dodgers starting on opening day or the second game of the season.
Okay. So we spent all winter talking about how the Dodgers were the most most aggressive team all winter. They were the winners of the winter, no question about it. The Oakland Athletics, I think, no question about it, the losers of the winter because they didn't do anything and they still don't have a shovel in the ground on a new ballpark. But I do think the Milwaukee Brewers might be in competition with the Oakland Athletics for the worst offseason of any team. They lose Craig Counsell, who I think is, arguably one of the best managers in baseball. They lose Corbin Burnes in a trade to the Baltimore Orioles. They lose Brandon Woodruff. Yeah, he got injured. And even though they signed Rhys Hoskins, some of the other things that went on had people scratching their heads saying, wait a second, they're not going to compete with what's going on with them this year. And then we got word from Jeff Passan late on Wednesday that Devin Williams has stress fractures in his back. He's out for months, Tim. You wonder if it's going to affect him beyond the trade deadline to the point that they're not going to be able to trade him. I can't think of a team that's had a worse offseason than them. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. As we know, Buster, the strength of the Brewers the last few years has been those five pitchers that they had, the three starters and then Hader and Williams out of the bullpen. Now they only have one of those guys, Freddie Peralta. And again, Hader left a couple of years ago, as we know, and I understood the Burnes trade, but they're just not the same team. And I know that Christian Yelich and others are talking up some of the young arms that they have in spring training, how impressive they are. But you can't lose Woodruff and Corbin Burnes and Hader 2 years ago, and now Devin Williams, an elite closer. You can't lose four out of your five most important players, basically, and win even a winnable division. I think they're in trouble right now, and I can't agree more. They've had a very – and it's not their fault. They just had some injuries and made some decisions that kind of had to be made by a small market team.
Tell me who you're picking the National League Central.
I think three – maybe four. I think three teams can win it. I think the Cardinals could come back and win it. I think the Cubs can win it. I think the Reds can win it. I'm going to say for today, the Cubs are going to win the division. I just think the Bellinger return makes that big of a difference. But, every year some team doesn't come out of nowhere, but just goes crazy and turns it on. The Reds have that possibility. They're just so young to me that I'm going to go with the Cubs at the moment.
All right, Tim. Well, thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
All right, Buster. Good luck at golf today.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
As Buster mentioned on the podcast earlier this week, he went from camp to camp in Southwest Florida and asked players to take a look at ESPN's top 100 list. And let's just say there were some very strong reactions. Players felt like they gave too much credit to players who are still very early in their respective careers, like Corbin Carroll of the Diamondbacks, and too little credit to guys who are well-established, like Mike Trout. Take a listen.
Yeah, I'd say those ones stick out. Mike Trout, 19. That's ridiculous, in my opinion.
Ronald Acuña Jr., I agree. Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Mookie Betts. I'll put probably Mookie Betts ahead of Juan just because of the fact that he's an all-around player that can do everything. Juan is one of the best hitters in the game, but Mookie's defense just sets him apart. Freddie, I like a lot. Corey had an unbelievable year. Gary, Jordan, Shohei. I'm assuming you got here Shohei because he's not pitching next year. So as a DH, yep, very well.
I think Corey Seager should be number two.
How come?
I played with that guy for so long in the minor leagues, and then watching him in the World Series was incredible. And knowing his work, I mean, I know work that doesn't do it, but he puts up numbers every freaking year. Who's the 100? Walker Buehler hasn't pitched in, what, 2 years? And he's in the top 100? I love Walker. He's one of my good buddies, but I mean, you got to play to be in the top 100, right? Real Muto, I think he should be higher. I think he's the best catcher in the league. I think just overall hitting.
Adley got the highest.
Did he? Yeah, I mean, I can see that. Adley's really switch hitting catcher.
On base.
Yeah. I just like the way Real Muto carries about his business.
Tucker, I think he need to be more like
higher. He's 28. I thought so too.
Yeah, eh?
I thought he should be like top 20. Like for me, he's super underrated.
Yeah. See, like you put Albi.
I'm like, excuse me?
What do you like about Tucker?
It's good. Everything. He can run, he can feel, he can hit, he do everything. Go global.
Yeah.
You know?
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
So I'm just going to do this because I feel like now I sort of need to do this, build this habit. Have you won any awards or are they naming some scholarships after you or something like that? Because it feels like every time I talk to you on a Thursday or Friday, the next day, some news breaks.
Oh, my gosh. No. I promise you know everything right now. I promise.
All right. Well, I'm sure something will be breaking here soon. So I really respect and like the trade that the Padres made for Dylan Cease. You know, given clearly their general manager, A.J. Preller, is under pressure to reform this team, to do the makeover while their payroll is coming down significantly. What did you think of the trade?
Oh, I loved it. You know, it's funny. I was just filling out my power ranking for MLB.com right before I hopped on here and talked to you. Now I don't have it in front of me. I don't have exactly where I had the Padres. But I would say it's about 5 spots higher than I would have had them. I did it before the trade because all of a sudden you look at that team, there's some real potential with the pitching, obviously with Cease, with Darvish, Musgrove, Michael King, who we know so much about. We've had so many times that relief ball. I think he'll be really good as a starter. And then you look at this as a team with a highly motivated Fernando Tatis Jr., and not to mention Manny Machado. All of a sudden, this team looks pretty, pretty good. Not winning the division necessarily, but being a real competitor in that NL West.
How are you lining up right now? I mean, who knows? Maybe there'll be some more moves to come. How are you? Would you project how the National League West is going to play out 1 through 5?
I mean, I believe based on how I had it, I did have them in third behind the Diamondbacks. I think the Diamondbacks are really going to build on what they've been in the postseason, they're going to be very, very good. Obviously, not an impact. And then beyond that, I mean, I know my mother didn't want to hear it when we were down in Arizona, but she is a pessimistic fan. I like when the Giants have none. I think they're going to be interesting, unfortunately, in that fourth place. But I do think they'll be interesting, and then you have the Rockies.
It's one of the easier divisions to actually pick because it's hard to imagine, you know, the Dodgers finishing anywhere but first in that division during the regular season. Then we'll see what happens. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three is 1,437. That is how many swings and misses Dylan Cease has had since the start of 2021. That is the most in the majors, and that's been 11 more than Garrett Cole and ahead of Corbin Burns as well. And I wanted to point out that last year, which a lot of people saw as a down year for Dylan Cease, and it was by ERA and such, but even in his quote-unquote down year, he had the sixth highest whiff rate in the majors among stars, mine only Strider, Stone, Freddy Peralta, Charlie Morton, and Jesus Luzardo. So for him to be in a better situation now, we know how good his stuff is. It's going to be really, really fun to watch.
Number two
is 20. So that's how old Jackson Merrill, another Padre, is. And on opening day in Seoul next week, he will be 20 years and 336 days old. He is a top prospect, and they're one of their big storylines this spring was whether he would make the team. And my shoulder is grateful about how he's earned the right to be on the plane. And he's earned what comes after the plane. He wouldn't go as far to actually say he'd be the opening day center fielder position, which, by the way, he barely knew before the spring. But it does look like he will be. And if so, he would be the fifth youngest opening day starting center fielder in the divisional era, older than only Ken Griffey Jr. twice, Don Hahn for the expansion of Expos, and Andrew Jones in 1998. This is really, really cool to see. And I will point out, we have any Brewers fans saying, hey, what about Earl Jackson? So Jackson Choria, who is also in the mix to make the Brewers, will be 20 years and 17 days old. So if he were to start in center, as is also possible, he'd be second on that list, and then Merrill would be sixth and seventh. Either way, really, really exciting for two young center fielders.
And number one.
Number one is one. We'll say one for the fact that the Rangers won the World Series last year. And they're in this really unique spot when they have not one, but two rookie of the year candidates, legit candidates, on their team, and Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford. So we saw Michael Harris II win the World Series and win Rookie of the Year in 2022. The year after the Braves had won the World Series, he was the first player to win Rookie of the Year on the reigning world champ since Steve Sachs in 1982. It's a very short list with Pat Zachary, Tom Trash, Frank Aaron, Tony Kubek, Bob Grimm, and Gal McDougall. So if Evan Carter or Wyatt Langford were to, I guess, beat out Jackson Holliday, will be their favorite and win the Rookie of the Year, they would join that very short list. But Evan Carter is even cooler because he played in the World Series. So only three guys have won Rookie of the Year after playing in the World Series in a prior season. Randy Rosarena did it in 2021, Todd Burrell did it in 1986, and Steve Sachs, of course, who I mentioned, in 1982. So the only guy to win a World Series and then win Rookie of the Year is Steve Sachs, and Evan Carter played a far bigger role than Sachs did on that World Series winning team. So just a really cool thing to think about.
Yeah, so as you said that, I was thinking to myself, well, oh, yeah, that's right, Fernando. I was thinking Fernando, but he didn't play in the World Series in 1980. I thought he potentially would be, you know, someone who could be a candidate for that. Andrew Jones also. I remember in 1996, he had that, you know, great showing in his first game in the World Series, and everybody was talking about what a great young player he was, but they didn't win the World Series. They were beaten by the Yankees.
Exactly.
Different situation. So speaking of the Yankees, we've already done the Yankees preview for this season. If Garrett Cole misses a significant amount of time, and that seems very likely at this point, what would your win projection shift to on the Yankees? And I'm hitting you with this really cold. If you want to couch it and go ish, you know, or some range. What are you thinking with the Yankees at this point?
I mean, certainly I believe I had 195 when we first said, certainly 90 or below. I don't think this team would win 85 or 80 games just without him. I do think it's a really big blow. I would say I would have the Orioles winning the division if I did it right now. And I think I would have the Yankees maybe either second or third in that division. I really like what the Blue Jays have. I want it to work out for them, so I might have them ahead. But I mean, you know, I'm optimistic, so I'm still thinking 88 to 90 or so. Depends how long that is. I know the timeline we saw was one to 2 months. Even that is a really big range. 1 month is 5 stars, 2 months is, you know, 10 starts practically because the season is almost here. But they do have other good pitching. I really hope things work out with Carlos Rodon this year. I felt badly for him, how the narrative went in his first year in New York. He looks really good in the most recent outing, I believe. And so hopefully he can kind of shoulder some of that.
I would agree with you. It's making it easy to pick the Orioles. If only Gunnar Henderson could get a hit. I mean, he's only hitting like .850 in spring training so far, Sarah. I know numbers don't matter, but good Lord.
No, and I think you saw, I mean, again, numbers don't matter, but Colin Cashier is like the fourth highest slugging percent in spring training so far this year. And he's not even definitively on the team yet, but I mean, they're going to be really, really good.
Unbelievable. All right, Sarah, good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Vassar.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 Team Preview, Cincinnati Reds.
The Reds had a small market version of a very aggressive winter, signing two veterans for the rotation in Nick Martinez and Frankie Montas, with Martinez getting a two-year, $26 million deal, and Montas signing for $16 million in a one-year contract. They added relievers Emilio Pagan on a two-year, $16 million contract, as well as left-hander Brent Suter. And they picked up respected infielder Jamer Candelaria to play the infield. As part of their transition, they also said their goodbyes to longtime star Joey Votto.
A guy to watch.
Corbin Carroll's wire-to-wire dominance made him the easy Rookie of the Year choice in the National League last year, and this obscured the great work the Reds' Matt McClain did in his first taste in the majors. He had an adjusted OPS of 129, batting .290 with 16 homers and 14 stolen bases in 89 games. He had an on-base percentage over .350 and his slugging percentage over .500. Most of his work last season was as shortstop. This year, he's moving to second base to play alongside Ellie De La Cruz.
The weakest link.
With the Reds playing in a cozy home ballpark, the looming question about them will probably always be the quality of the starting pitching. And this could be one of the best groups they've had in a while, with Montas and Martinez now part of the group. Hunter Green may prove to be the difference between the Reds contending for a playoff spot or not. He is in year three of his career and has shown flashes of dominance. Last year, he struck out a staggering 152 batters in 112 innings, but he also allowed 19 homers among 111 hits while walking 48, which is why his ERA landed at 4.82. The Reds need more and better from him.
Win projection.
Sarah Lang says the Reds will win 79 after an 82-win season last year. Pakoda pegs them for 78 wins. Hembo says 81 wins. I've got them for 84, vying for one of the wildcard spots. Jeff Brantley is the analyst on Cincinnati Reds baseball on the radio network. And Jeff, it's been fun this winter to see the Reds be as aggressive as they've been. Tell me what you're seeing in them and what the reaction's been to them being aggressive in the free agent market.
Number one, I think we've seen a lot of people come from Cincinnati to Arizona to Goodyear to watch some baseball, and it's not usually like that. We really haven't had a tremendous following out here in Arizona. This year has been quite different. We've got a lot. There's a lot more red in the stands. I think the city is excited, and a lot of that goes back to last year, Buster. I think this club really made a push where nobody else expected them to make it in the middle of the year. And once they got to September, a lot of these kids got tired, but it was still exciting baseball and exciting moving forward.
Where is Hunter Green in his development? Because it feels like to me from the outside looking in, he's as important as anybody is in terms of them evolving and moving forward.
I think that's an everyday question. I think that anytime you've got a 23-year-old kid that can throw the ball 100-plus miles an hour, and he's a Doc Gooden body. I mean, he is a big kid. I think for Hunter, it's still a developmental process trying to understand the give and take of pitching. And basically just you would think that if the guy throws 100 miles an hour, he could just blow the ball by people. Well, hitters are so used to velocity now, you've still got to be able to pitch even with exceptional stuff. And I think that's still a driving force in him. I think when he's on his game, I think he pitches awfully well. I think he feels that slider. He locates the fastball. But to survive as a starter in the big leagues, you've got to be able to do it when you don't feel so great, or maybe your location isn't quite there, or you're struggling with your breaking ball.
I really felt like last year that Corbin Carroll was such a great player from the beginning of the year to the end of the year that he obscured some of the work of the young players like Matt McClain, who for me was like, I watched the game and I think the line I said on radio was like, it's like he's coming for your lunch money. I mean, he is so serious as a player. Tell me what you see in him.
I just think that he's an infectious personality. He's really high energy. The kid can play both second and shortstop and play them well at the big league level. I think he's going to ultimately settle in at second base. But I think probably what most people are surprised of when they see Matt McClain in person is he's not a big kid, but he hits like a big kid. And I think in our ballpark last year, we saw that really opposite field power, right field home runs. And that was not really something I think anybody expected to see. And he hit the ball with some serious pop.
What's next for Ellie De La Cruz?
I think for Ellie, it's just continuing to progress as he has this spring. He's made some adjustments with his swing. I think the swing is tighter, not as big of a leg kick. I don't think he's trying to hit every ball 500 feet. I think when you get to the big leagues and you have that kind of power and you get noticed so much for hitting a home run with great distance, you try to hit them all that way. And you ultimately end up striking out a lot and end up with your batting average going straight down. And I think that's kind of what happened to him last year. But he's made some adjustments this spring and good adjustments to where he's hitting the ball the other way. He's kind of taking what the defense will give him. And I think ultimately for him, I think he's going to hit in the big leagues. I think the biggest question mark moving forward is, can a guy that is that big at 6'5", 6'6", can he play shortstop every day moving forward? Right now, I think the answer is yes, but that question is always going to be out there.
Within the context of the National League Central, tell me where you project the Reds.
I think they should compete for first place. That's just my opinion. And a lot of that depends on the maturity of these young players as they move forward. But I look at our lineup 1 through 9, and then you add a couple of guys off the bench. They showed last year that they can hit anybody. And I think that in our ballpark plays awfully well. Is our pitching staff going to catch up to that young hitting prowess? Well, only time will tell. We've been talking about that for 2 years now, and for one reason or another, whether it's inexperience or whether it's been injury, we've kind of fallen down from a pitching standpoint. We've had to really dip into the minor leagues to bring guys up that may or may not even be ready, but have good arms. And I think for us, I think this club is going to hit. I think they'll be able to hit with anybody in baseball, and That's my opinion, but I get to see them every single day. I think they're a dangerous lineup.
That's why I wanted you on, Cowboy. You see them every day. You know them. I don't know them. Thanks for coming on.
All right, buddy. Good to see you.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 team preview. Detroit Tigers, machinations.
The Tigers' trajectory was on the upswing at the end of last season, and the Detroit front office looked to augment the team with more experience during the winter. Jack Flaherty signed a 1-year contract in what should be an important year for him and the Tigers. And Detroit signed Kenta Maeda and Gio Urshela and traded for the respected outfielder Mark Canha.
A guy to watch.
Spencer Torkelson was the first player taken in the draft in 2020, And last year, the Tigers started to get some real return on that investment. Torkelson blasted 31 homers to go along with 34 doubles. The most important factor for the Tigers this season is the development of their young position players like Torkelson and Riley Green.
The Foundation.
Tarek Skubal is regarded by his peers to be among the most dominant pitchers in the game. And really, all that's left for the left-hander to do is to extend his success over a full season. In 15 starts last year, Skubal had a 2.80 ERA, 102 strikeouts in 80 and a third innings. If the Tigers exceed expectations and make the playoffs this year, he'll be the primary reason.
Win projection.
Detroit won 78 games last year and is projected to win 75.8 this season by Pecota. Hembo says 75. Sarah Lang says 75. I'll be the optimist in the group and say 79. Jason Beck covers the Detroit Tigers for MLB.com. Jason, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I should mention you were at a ballpark. There's game action going on in the background, but that you're a multitasker. You'll be able to handle this easily.
We get used to ambient noise in our jobs, Buster. You know that well.
Oh, I know. Yeah, my kids always wonder why I ignore them when they're calling to me. And I said, I'm sorry, I blocked you out, everything you were trying to say to me. All right. The Tigers this year seem to be past the diaper phase, well past the diaper phase, with expectation like, okay, let's get serious here. What's your read on this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're past the diaper phase. I think they're, walking with fairly good comfort level. And, we're starting to see whether they can trot and run a little bit here. You see the progress from young hitters. I think you've seen further progress from the young pitchers to the point where you look at, the bulk of the rotation, I think, has a chance to be homegrown. The heart of the lineup is probably going to be homegrown. And that's something that this organization hasn't been able to say for a good team for a good long time. Really probably since like the 80s or 90s, realistically. The key is going to be, I think, can these hitters take the next step and be dangerous hitters in their own rights, as opposed to guys who support other guys in the lineup?
Specifically, Spencer Torkelson, who took a big step forward in 2023. What is the next step in his development in your eyes?
I think sustaining the power is big. It seemed to come and go in bunches. He was a streaky hitter by his own admission. I think he's looking to, have a consistent approach and get more consistent results out of it, not just in bunches. And also, I think to boost the average a little bit. I don't think he's ever going to be necessarily like a high average hitter who challenges 300 or anything like that. But I think he wants to be able to do a little bit more damage to, aside from the raw power totals. Obviously, Comerica is a big ballpark. There's a lot of production there aside from the home runs. If you can hit the gaps, hit doubles, and move runners along there, which I think is going to be more of where the Tigers are going to be able to do their damage. And that's going to require a little bit less swing and miss, and a little bit more damage even on pitches that aren't necessarily, the big damage pitches.
Cole Keith, 9 years, $82 million with his contract that he signed with the team. What's next for him and his development as a hitter?
To show that he can stick in the majors after not having a day in the majors before signing that contract. What he showed on his way up the minor leagues is really impressive. Power with play discipline, which I think is a blueprint for what this organization wants to be able to do with more young hitters who come up through the system. He's got to be able to sustain that approach and to be confident that he's going to get his pitch to hit and that when he does, he's not going to miss it. It's easier said than done, especially for somebody who, when you look at it, has not really had a ton of minor league at bats, not just because he was a 2020 draft pick, but also because, he lost the better part of a year to an injury back in 2022. you know, he lost the better part of an A-ball season there, which he tried to make up for it with a good Arizona Fall League, but that's still a lot of developmental time. You know, he closed the gap quite a bit with a really eye-opening season in Double-A or in Triple-A Toledo last year. But there's still a lot of pitches to be seen there.
Tell me about, what, in your opinion, Riley Green. What's his next step as a player?
Well, if you talk to Riley, it's about getting the ball into the air and doing more damage on line drives and fly ball home runs. You know, he's been talking about that for the better part of 2 years now. He's tired of hitting the ball on the ground. He wants to be a more dangerous impact hitter. He wants to be a run producer. Now, how do you do that without necessarily selling out for power? I've been encouraged this spring about what he's been able to do, hitting the ball to the opposite field. I think there's a whole other world out there for him to be able to take advantage of, especially if pitchers are trying to, you know, stay away from his power zone. We'll see if that's enough. I think if he can do that, get pitchers to work more into his power areas, then I think we're going to see a really good all-around hitter. He still has the potential to be the best hitter of the bunch in this group. I think the talent is absolutely there, and the all-around skill set, you know, especially when you add in his running ability, which is still pretty well sustained even after the injuries that he's gone through. So it's a matter of staying healthy, staying on the field, and knowing what he can do damage-wise and not necessarily selling out for it.
Jason, thanks for doing this.
Good talking with you, Buster. Thanks for having me on for this.
Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals on the hottest tickets. Experience it live.
Bleacher Tweets.
Hey, everybody. We got another round of Bleacher Tweets for you. And this first one, we're kicking off with Brad.
Hey, Buster. This is Brad from Northeast Michigan and big-time Tigers fan. And the Tigers obviously are going to start Colt Keith at second base after he signed that extension in the offseason. And if he can have a good year where he might be like rookie of the year caliber, I think the Tigers have enough to compete with the Twins in the division with Skubal and Maeda at the top of the rotation, a decent bullpen, and, of course, all the young hitters. Have you heard anything about maybe the expectations for Colt Keith at second base? Thanks.
Well, the fact that they invested, as you point out, the fact that they invested that kind of money in him tells you a lot about their belief in what he's going to do. And I will say this, you know, during the winter, I reached out to one of the Tigers people who I know, and I said, what's the most important factor? And this person got back to me and said, it's definitely the production and the evolution of these young position players. And look, he's one of their best, 22 years old. You know, left-handed hitter. I'm excited to see him play this year.
Here's the next one.
Hey, Buster. This is Jonathan from Los Angeles. And hi to Sean. And a special love for Taylor with the new baby at home. Long-time listener and first-time caller. I got a question prompted by the potential injury to Gerrit Cole as we wait to hear what happened here. Big blow for the Yankees, obviously, poised to win this year. Had me thinking, Buster, in your experience, maybe from teams you've covered or just observed as a lifelong fan, what are some injuries that were maybe most consequential as far as the team's destiny for one season or even multiple seasons, ones that had the most consequence on a team and their expectations? Thanks for everything, and keep it up.
Man, that is a great question. And it feels like every year, you know, you have some, you know, across the board. It feels like with this rash of Tommy Johns, you're just like, oh, my God. Like last year, Jacob deGrom, you know, going down and needing Tommy John surgery, that was a body blow right away. You know, I know DeGrom had a couple of years like that when he was with the Mets, where you felt like, you know, when he went down, you're just wondering if he can recover. It was interesting, Sean. I was talking with someone within the Yankees organization who, when I said, you know, how's everybody feeling, and he goes, it's like people are walking around here like they're just white as ghosts, like they are just stunned by the fact that, you know, they had this whole plan built around Aaron Judge and Gerrit Cole, and now the best pitcher on the planet's going to be out a while.
Here's the next one.
Hey guys, this is Landon from Atlanta. Buster, recently you've talked about the Dodgers having a hole at shortstop and possibly looking to get that filled with Willy Adames or someone else. Is it possible that there's more holes on the team than have been advertised? I could see third base being an upgrade and possibly the outfield. With Max Muncy aging both defensively and offensively, Jason Hayward in right field, and James Outman possibly having a regression to the mean. I could see them needing one or two bats to fill these spots, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Thank you.
I think you're right that there are definitely guys on that team. You know, they've got some older guys that, you know, maybe what we're seeing, as you point out, is the beginning of the end. The one thing I would say is that I just think they have such volume of excellent players. And when guys are in position like Jason Hayward, where you're not totally sure if he's going to bounce back from last season and have have another season like he did last year and contribute, they just have so much depth and they have multiple guys. So their feeling is, look, if you know Chris Taylor last year had a down year, and then you know other guys stepped up and they filled in and they have a great offense. And when you start your lineup with Betts and with Shohei Ohtani and with Freddie Freeman and with Will Smith, there is potentially so much margin for error that they'll be able to play past that. But I think you're right. In theory, you know, they might have to go out and get some stuff at the trade deadline. And Andrew Freeman, their head of baseball operations, has demonstrated he's very willing to do that.
And that wraps up our Bleacher Tweets for today. If you want to leave us a message, you can call us at 406-404-8460. Or you can tag mention Buster on Twitter and hashtag Bleacher Tweets.
Well, that's it for today. My thanks today to the Cowboy, Jeff Brantley, to Jason Beck, to Sarah Langs, to Tim Kirchin, to Sean Bartley. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.